We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, the weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your networking community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey, everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Josh Hoffman. Josh runs the website Hack My Time, where he helps people improve their time management habits and productivity skills to live a more fulfilling life. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you here because this is my number one goal for 2019 is to control my own time management. So a little of my own wanting to hear what you have to say, but I'm sure I know this. I'm not the only person that's going to want to hear what you have to say, too.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people in general are noticing that time is becoming their most valuable and most limited resource. And so for me, it just kind of made sense to create a website called Hack My Time.
I love it. So what's the one thing most people get wrong about productivity?
So the productivity really boils down, and also time management, to habits and skills. I think a lot of people, and I used to be one of those these people, they tell themselves, I'm not that kind of person. Like, I'm just not very time efficient, or like, you know, I'm a chronic procrastinator, or, you know, and we kind of tell ourselves these stories of, you know, we were born this way, or this is just how we are. And again, I used to be one of those people. And then I realized over time that actually that's fundamentally incorrect, because at the basis of time management and productivity is habits and skills. And those are two things that we learn, just like riding a bike, learning how to swim, using utensils, and also professional skills, of course. We learn these things not because we're born one way or another, not because we have, you know, different personality traits or don't have different personality traits, but things that with the right sort of work and mentality, we can definitely obtain these habits and skills.
Oh, absolutely. I think it comes down to habits and skills. And you know, at the end of the day, though, I think, I guess, what is your practice with regards to like making these habits and really focusing in on these skills of managing time?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So, you know, I actually will revert to a book that I recently read called Peak, The New Science on Expertise, something like that. I don't remember the tagline, but the point of the book is basically, how do you become great or just good even at something that you want to develop a skill in your personal professional life, let's say. And so the authors, Robert Toole and Anders Ericsson, outline really four primary components or principles of what they call purposeful practice. So one is getting outside of your comfort zone, but not getting too far outside your comfort zone to where you're just completely overwhelmed. The second is having clear goals and a plan of action. The third is having direct measurement and feedback loops. And the fourth is having some sort of internal or external motivation. And so, you know, when I'm trying to develop a new skill or trying to develop an existing skill, I'm always using those four core principles as my baseline to make sure that I'm on the right path. Because the opposite of purposeful practice is what they call naive practice, which is what I think a lot of, you know, people like you and me and other entrepreneurs start out doing, a lot of trial and error and a lot of throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks. And what they talk about is, you know, that's not the way to actually level up in meaningful ways. You really have to abide by these four, components and principles that I just outlined.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. It totally makes sense. And now I have another book I want to check out.
Which is great book. Really like, you know, changed everything that I thought about just becoming good at anything, you know, whether it's an instrument or cooking or, you know, some sort of sport or anything in your professional life. It really changed my entire mentality of how to approach skill development.
So let's circle back to time management a little bit here again. What's one way that our listeners can instantly improve their time management?
I'm actually going to give you two. I know we talked about this before the show and we said it would be one, but I'm going to give you two. I think the first one is stop checking your email so much. I was a compulsive email checker. I mean, it was ridiculous. Like it literally got to the point where I would take out my phone and without even thinking, I would automatically click the Gmail app on my iPhone. And then and that was when I was like, okay, this is like, you know, when it's becoming my default, and not just something that I'm actually opening my phone and like seeking out specifically for maybe a legitimate reason. That's when I was like, all right, Josh, like this is becoming some sort of an addiction, really. And I know that's a strong word, but I fundamentally believe that our digital tools are very, at the very least, habit forming and at the very most addictive. And there's actually a lot of research and science that's starting to back that sort of claim up. So stop checking your email so much. You know, it's something that really is what's referred to as shallow work. And another book that I read in the past few months that really shifted my paradigm, something called a book called Deep Work by Cal Newport. So shallow work is email checking, it's phone calls, it's a lot of meetings, it's things that don't require real cognitive abilities. And we get caught up in a lot of these things and they're big time sucks. And so I went from checking my email about 50 times a day to 5 times a day. And I can tell you now doing this for several weeks, not a single person in my life has come to me and said, oh, why didn't you get back to me sooner? Why didn't you send me that email faster? So there actually has been zero difference in whether I check my email 5 times a day or 50 times a day. The second thing is stop checking your phone in general so much and put your phone away when you're working. You know, there's a recent New York Times article that came out that actually the headline was like, put your phone away while you're working, seriously. And it talked about, you know, just by having our phone on our desk in sight, even if it's turned over on silent, whatever, just by having it there automatically makes us less productive. And so let alone, you know, getting the notifications and the, you know, all the different things that the phone does for us, a lot of good things, by the way, but also a lot of bad things. And it's a slippery slope. And so I would definitely challenge people to really give themselves a hard look in the mirror, proverbially speaking, and ask yourself, are you a little bit addicted to your phone? And I think a lot of people don't want to admit that they are. And I think I used to be one of those people. But when I started downloading apps that actually showed me how much I use my phone and how much I use each app, and when I started really being a little bit more conscientious about it, I noticed it's a sickness and it's a slippery slope, like I said, because the phone does so many great things for us. Don't get me wrong. But once you start getting more into the social media and the email, like I talked about, and some of the other things that our phones allow us to do, big time suck. Habit forming has tremendous implications on our ability to sustain focus for long periods of time, which is actually the definition of deep work. And so those are the two things that I'd really, you know, say immediately people can start doing tomorrow. Check your email less, put your phone away more.
I love both of those. And I can already, I'm practicing the checking email less thing right now. And there's a little like anxiety with it, but at the same time, I think it's, to, unfortunately, the word is addiction. It's because you're kind of getting over this addiction, right?
Exactly. It's this, and I've heard people describe it as like a feeling of importance. Like the more email I get, the more important I feel. I can definitely relate to that sort of sentiment. I think the other thing is it distracts us from the real work, the real progress. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad calls it getting caught up in the thick of thin things. I call it mistaking motion for progress. I think we have to start taking a hard look at what it really means to be productive. And oftentimes you'll see that email is not one of those things.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating, actually. And I think if something's very critical, then someone's going to pick up the phone and call you, actually, or try to get on your calendar to have a defined conversation about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that I talk about often is this, a lot of people mistake urgency for importance, right? Like there's a lot of things that you get in your email or that you have to send via email that are absolutely important. No question about it. But does it matter if it gets done right now or in 3 hours, today or tomorrow, this Thursday or next Tuesday? And those are the kind of things that people really have to start thinking about, because there's an endless list of important things. But when you actually measure that list against what's truly urgent, that list becomes a tenth of what it was. And then we can start making better decisions about what we really need to be focusing on today.
Nice. So at the end of the day, how did you become so fascinated with time management?
So I was raised with this mentality or this approach to life that you do well in high school, which I did okay, that you then go to college, you study something that you're passionate about, and then you go get a job and you kind of like, that's what you do for the next 20 to 30 to 40 years. You know, you pick a profession and you work your way up. And certainly for a lot of people, that might still be relevant. I think for more people today than not, it's not relevant. I think that we're moving into this sort of multi-profession, multidisciplinary sort of careers that people are going to start having. I can tell you, I'm just about to turn 30, and I'm now embarking on my third profession, which some people might look at that and be like, oh, you have like a professional ADD and you can't hold a job or whatever. But actually, the truth is that our world is changing so fast these days. Most people know, and most people can't catch up or keep up. And so what's happening is, I think that when you look at, you know, automation and big data and machine learning and virtual reality and all these really in blockchain and all these, you know, these huge monumental shifts in how we live, how we work, how we communicate, we're going to start seeing, you know, people having to reinvent themselves time and again. And the thing that I love about time management and productivity is that they transcend every single profession. So mm-hmm. You might have 3 to 5 to 7 to 10 professions over the course of your working life. But time management and productivity will not only be, you know, a staple across all those professions, but will actually help you excel and succeed and break into each one as you go from one to the next. And that's what gets me so amped about these two topics.
I love it. And there's so much truth to that. Is really, there's no wall that says, oh, this field or industry or whatever cannot use any time management or productivity skills.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about networking a little bit, because that's really what the focus of the show is on. And obviously, time management is going to be a critical part of really building those relationships. One of my goals is to really alleviate the fear that people have when they hear that word networking. So can you help me do that by sharing with our listeners your favorite networking story or experience that you've had?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for me, when I was younger, I think I'm still a little bit young. I thought of networking as this concept of, you know, going to an event and handing out a business card and collecting other people's business cards. And then as I got older, I realized actually networking is something that you do every day in some form or fashion. And I actually started to call it the networking of life. I think people get so caught up in like, oh, I got to go to all these networking events and I got to have all these business cards. And I'm not discouraging anyone from doing that. Don't get me wrong. I think in addition to that, we also have to look at networking as a day-to-day thing. And something that, you know, you meet people every day. You know, sometimes you meet 7 new people, sometimes you meet 1 new person, but you're more or less meeting new people every day. And so your ability to, you know, organically network in those sort of situations, I think, is way more helpful than solely relying on, you know, that you know, the events and the business cards and the conferences and so on and so forth. And so I was in Tel Aviv at a sunglasses shop, and I started talking to the business owner of the sunglasses shop, and I asked her, I said, oh, like, you know, is this your only store? Do you have other stores? And she said, we have this one store, and then we also sell online. And then the next thing she said literally changed my entire view of like entrepreneurs, being an entrepreneur and being a freelancer and owning a business and like life. She said, act local, think global, right? So for her and her business, act local was have a local store in Tel Aviv. Think global was we saw on the internet as well. And so that's the same way that I would, that's the same approach that I've since then been taking to networking, which is act local. What can you do locally in terms of networking? So events, conferences, meetups, et cetera, but then think global. How can you use the internet to expand and grow your network?
Yeah, that's great. I love that. Definitely heard that. I'm trying to recall when and where I've heard that, but I've never really thought about applying it from a networking perspective, but that totally makes sense. Really, really cool. Mm-hmm. So as you're focusing, you know, acting local, getting involved locally, thinking globally, I mean, that's huge as far as the reach that you have there. How do you stay in front of or nurture these relationships that you're creating?
It's a great question. One of the things that I recently started doing, and I wish I had been doing it for longer, is I started sending these I thought about you emails and messages to people. What does that mean? It means that when I read an article or watch a video or any piece of content that I come across on the internet, there's in any given piece of content, there's at least 3 to 13 people that I know that I've met that I'm either friends with or colleagues or former clients, current clients, people I met at events, no matter who, 3 to 13 people who I can send this piece of content to because I know they'll be interested in it. And so I put in the subject line, thought about you, which kind of makes them feel extra special. It's a little psychological trick. And then I just say, hey, you know, I was watching this or I was reading this and thought you would enjoy it as well, and send them the link. And so that's something that I think has been pretty good for me in terms of just staying relevant on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I also create a lot of content and people, you know, stay in contact with me by reading my content. But at the same time, having that personal one-to-one of like, I thought about you because I read this or watched this, also adds that intimacy that you don't get from like content marketing and things of that nature.
Yeah, that's great. And I love that little tidbit to share, whether it's an email or, you know, tagging someone on a post on social media that says, oh, this is for you. That definitely gives them a little bit of a nudge of positivity, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everyone likes to be thought about, right? I mean, it's always a pleasant feeling when somebody says, I thought about you, usually at least.
So what advice would you offer that business professional who's just getting started and is looking to grow their network?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And there's just so much. I mean, that's like another 4 hours of content we could produce just on that question. To keep it short, you know, I would say I was actually just talking to somebody last night who called me and asked me, you know, I want to start this business and had all these questions. And then at the end, she's like, well, where do I start? And I said, you know, I think there's definitely something to be said about learning and consuming content and getting on the phone with, you know, people that have kind of been there and done that. And asking them different questions. So there's like the content consumption and learning phase, but then there's the doing phase. And so I would always say have that one-to-one ratio and let's put it into actual time, right? I mean, that's hack my time, obviously. For every 1 hour of learning and consuming, put in 1 hour of doing, of implementing what you learned and consumed.
Nice. I like that.
Because you know how it is. I mean, we've all been there where you just, there's always more to learn and to read to watch and to ask. And you can just go down that rabbit hole and it's never ending. And so, you know, people, I think, get caught up in that like Googling and, you know, all these different things that you can do with the internet to try to start, but then you actually don't start. And so I think that's a good one-to-one ratio rule of ensuring that you're implementing and making progress day by day.
I can totally relate to that. I would say, and I'm going to use the word addiction again, like learning, the older I get, the more I find that I'm addicted to learning new things. And I, like you said, you can just end up in rabbit holes of educating yourself or attending conferences, reading books, whatever it is. But the doing is really where you get that productivity.
You know, there was an interesting study that was in the book Peak that I referenced a few minutes ago that talks about there's several studies, like something like 60 studies, in which it's been proven that doctors, as they get older, actually become less good at being a doctor, which to me is like crazy, because I always thought like, no, I want to go to a doctor who's been in practice for 20, 30 years, because, you know, the more experience that person has, you know, I'm sure that makes him or her a better doctor. But what these studies actually show is that after doctors go through, you know, pre-med school and then med school and then their residency and internships and all like the really hands-on heavy duty stuff they have to do at the start of their career, after they do that and then they develop their practice, they don't actually, what they do on a day-to-day basis is not challenging. And when they do review like new research, or they go to seminars or conferences or watch videos or whatever to constantly keep their knowledge and expertise up to date, learning by consuming makes them less good at their profession, because it's been proven that learning by doing is actually where you can make significant leaps in becoming better at whatever it is you want to be doing. Or if you're talking about building a business, then progressing that business according to your timeline and according to your expectations. And I always thought that was so interesting, because, you know, I always thought going to like older doctors was the right thing to do. And now I'm thinking, wait, maybe I should go to younger doctors who are fresh out of med school or fresh after their residency, because they actually have obtained so much more knowledge than just, you know, watching and reading and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I can totally get that. That definitely makes sense. It's an interesting study. It totally makes sense though. Because they're just kind of in their norm and, yeah, wow. Okay. So let's, talk about digital networking a little bit. More specifically, the question being digital networking or traditional networking, which one do you find more value in?
Digital. You know, I think we live in a digital world. In one of my previous professions, I was a digital marketer. His name is escaping me off the top of my head, but the CMO, the chief marketing officer of, I believe it was Procter & Gamble, or it was one of those, you know, multinational companies. He says that we don't do digital marketing. We do marketing in a digital world. And I think that's especially if you're in marketing, you totally get it. It's a major differentiation, because most people today still look at the world as offline and online. But we know about the Internet of Things, and we know that more devices today are equipped with the Internet, and we know about the extent and the reach of the Internet and all the implications of things upcoming like virtual reality and blockchain, big data, you know, all these crazy things. And that's why when you say digital networking or traditional, you know, this guy, the CMO would call it networking in a digital world. And I think that's the sort of approach and the sort of mentality that we, as people living now in a predominantly digital world, have to look at networking and virtually everything we do.
Totally makes sense. I love that. I've not heard that before, but it totally makes sense. Because really, that's exactly what we're happening. The world's changed, is what it has come down to. Which is ironic, though. I mean, if you think about it, and as you're saying, you know, let's spend less time on those digital tools, right? Stop having your phone within an arm's reach, stop checking your email. But the world that we're living in right now is all digital.
It is ironic. It's actually like discussing how ironic that is. You know, it's about finding the balance, obviously, with everything in life, moderation, as they say, which is certainly easier said than done. When it comes to the time management and productivity stuff, I think it's about, even though we work, like there's a lot of things that you can do on your devices that will make you more productive and time efficient. And so I think it's about, like I have this accelerator, this like these 15 micro challenges that I send people as part of this accelerator. And the first three about how do you outsmart your smartphone? And so there's certain settings that you can configure, and there's certain apps that you can download, and you can do the same thing with your inbox. I use, like I have Gmail, so it's called Boomerang for Gmail. And I know they have Boomerang for Outlook as well. And so this feature for Gmail allows me to pause my inbox, which means even though people are sending me emails or I'm getting emails, I don't see them in my inbox because my inbox is paused, and only until I unpause my inbox do I start to see the inflow of emails. And so that allows me to go in and like check my email when I need to, like, you know, search for something or even send an email without seeing this onslaught of emails every time I go into my email. And that creates what I call digital ADD. And I think everyone can relate to that, where it's, you know, you have an intention of, you know, going to search something in your email, you open your email and you see 10 emails and you start going through all your emails and you forgot to do what you originally wanted to do. Or same thing, you know, when you open your phone because you wanted to do something, but then you had 6 text messages and, you know, a few Facebook notifications, and all of a sudden you're 15 minutes later, you're just all over the place and you didn't really do what you wanted to do when you opened your phone in the first place. And so there's a lot of ways, in short, that you can really configure these digital devices to work for you so that they're not taking advantage of you.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, there's a lot of tools available, and what it comes down to is using the tools that fit your goals and objectives.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Boomerang's great. I've definitely used that before. So we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person that you'd love to connect with, and do you think you could do it within the 6th degree?
I think so. You know, I think I could probably do it in the 4th degree. And I guess you want me to tell you who that one person is?
Absolutely.
You know, I just grew up in Los Angeles as a major Lakers fan. Basketball is my favorite sport. And I would say Kobe Bryant. You know, he's retired now, but he does so many interesting things. He, you know, has like a media production company, and he's involved in venture capital you know, I think he would be somebody is wildly intelligent. You know, a lot of people in general kind of look at athletes as maybe not so intelligent. And, you know, just like in every field, you have intelligent and not intelligent people. But he's somebody that to me was my role model, you know, growing up, and my favorite player, and somebody that I would love to just, you know, sit down for 30 minutes and talk about a whole lot of things.
So you said you could do it within the 4th degree. What stopped you from getting started on that journey to connect with him?
I think that I'm intimidated and probably scared of failing. And I think if I got over those things, I would go for it. I also don't live in Los Angeles anymore, and I don't even live in the United States. So that's also a little bit of an obstacle, although I would definitely be on the next flight if I had a meeting with him in Los Angeles or virtually anywhere else in the world.
Well, I think that you should definitely take the steps and try, because why not, right? What's going to happen if you fail?
Nothing. I would be in the same place as I am now. You're absolutely right. And honestly, that question might be the impetus for me to actually try that out. So I will get back to you about that. And I also want to thank you for you know, kind of giving me that kick in the butt, because I think sometimes we all need that in one way or another.
Yeah, we all do. And I mean, that's what you're doing, is you're helping a number of people with their productivity and time management. And I'm going to nudge you to make that connection to Kobe Bryant, because I believe you can do it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Like I said, I'll get back to you.
I look forward to hearing back from you. All right. So any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
You know, it's always the 51-49 rule. Give more than you ask. You know, there's a great story about a real estate developer, I think in Japan or China, I don't remember where, but he's like infamous for always giving his investors or his partners 51% of every deal. Because usually it's like kind of 50-50. That's how it breaks down. You know, at least like that's the obvious way to break it down in a partnership in most cases. Mm-hmm. But he, like, you know, he doesn't even tell them. He just puts in the contract, you know, you guys get 51, I'll take my 49. And I think that's like symbolic of just the whole sentiment of, I'm always going to give more value than I ask for in return. And I think, you know, that's, it's also like kind of a, you know, people have been beating that drum for a while. I don't want to like take credit as the like purveyor of that sentiment, but I just think it's, there's a reason why people keep talking about it. And especially in our digital world with social media and all these different tools now that you can give on a daily basis or weekly basis or whatever basis works for you. I think it's, you know, it's more true now more than ever. And I think there's a reason why it keeps getting talked about, because it's, you know, it's like cliches, but they're cliches because they're true. And so that's, you know, that's what I would leave your listeners with.
Well, I think that's great. Yeah, I mean, it's better to give than to receive. And I mean, there's so many little statements that fall under that bucket, but it's great advice. I think it's really sound information that everyone should be practicing. All right, Josh, if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what is the best way that they can reach you?
Yeah, I mean, hackmytime.co is the website. You can just Google search Josh Hoffman, and you can search me on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and I'm on all those platforms. So definitely reach out if you're interested in having a further dialogue about time management, productivity, or even basketball. I like talking basketball too.
Great. And we will include all of that information in our show notes. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You had some great advice for our listeners. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Josh Hoffman for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we will see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.